I have
current geek.
Hello and welcome to Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world and you, to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson with the one, the only, the Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
You know what? That's not true. There's lots of Tom Merritts in this world, Scott Johnson, but only one is always excited to kick off the weekend in the right way.
There are many Tom Merritts, but this one is mine. Why not mine, but ours. This one is ours.
Yes. Something like that. Like Apple Ciroc is to DJ Khaled, this show is to the weekend, the only way.
I apparently have not been following Khaled in a long time. Had I been doing that, I would understand that reference, but I should get back on that.
Well, now you can just repeat it verbatim and the kids will think you're ultra hip.
Well.
Just say DJ Khaled, though. Just
okay. Make sure you say always say Khaled and then you fix it. So thank you for that. You've cleared it all up. We're here to talk about nerdy stuff. We got news, we got interaction, we got fun times, we have pop quizzes, we have forecasts, we have all kinds of stuff, but we don't have any of it without a guest. And today, joining us for the first time, he's an author, and his name is Brian Guthrie, and it's 2 a.m. where he is. Brian, welcome to the
1
show.
1 a.m.
1 a.m. Okay, it's not so bad then. If I were you, I'd still be up playing WoW at 1 a.m.
Japan, I was playing Civ.
You are in Japan, yes?
No, my parents live in Japan. I'm in Germany.
Germany. Okay. All right. That's sweet. So, Civ, Tom, already you like this episode more because our guest is playing Civ. You're a big Civ fan.
It turns out that I met Brian last year at Dragon Con when a little under NDA. Don't know anybody tell us, but he's Steve Rogers.
Whoa,
he's Captain America.
What?
Yeah.
Didn't you just turn on the whole, you turned on S.H.I.E.L.D. and turned on the whole government or something, right?
Like, if you pay attention to FSL tonight, last year's finale from Dragon Con, and we're talking about Captain America. There you go. This is the man right here.
Something about juicing and secret super soldier serum.
Sure.
Yep. We uncovered it all. We blew the lid off of Steve.
Yeah. Old Cap. He's a big fan of the juicing. That's for sure. Hey, it's good to have you here. We're going to talk more about what you're up to these days. But before all of that, we've got these here top stories.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering. As do many others in high public office.
Tom, what do we got today?
Well, it was quite the week for the geeks. Google announced a cornucopia of hardware this week. Yes, Google getting way into hardware with two Pixel phones. That's the name of the phone, the Pixel, a 5-inch and a 5.5-inch version. These will run stock Android and include Google's Assistant built in a way that you can't get in other Android phones. They also announced the Google Home connected speaker, kind of a competitor to the Amazon Echo. A Google Wi-Fi mesh wireless router system, which will work with their Project Orb router, but works kind of like Google Eero. I'm sorry, not Google Eero. One thing that isn't named Google. It works kind of like Eero in that you buy multiples of them for a large house, and they will coordinate with each other to hand you off seamlessly from one to the other, so you get wider connectivity and better connectivity. Chromecast Ultra is a new version of the Chromecast that'll support 4K. And HDR, and the Daydream View VR headset, which to start with will only work with the Pixel phones, but it'll be able to come to other phones fairly shortly. And that one just allows you to put the phone in and use it for VR like you would with cardboard. But Daydream VR uses NFC to be able to allow you to connect to the glasses themselves, and it's cloth, so it's supposed to be a lot more comfortable on your face.
It doesn't look nearly as gnarly and heavy. I do have a question, though, about what the phones actually look really cool to me. First time in a very long time that I've been interested in a flagship Android device, and I think maybe it's because Google's making it. I know they're not making it, but they've designed it from the beginning to the end. Whatever hardware partners they're working with, whether it's HTC or somebody else, it seems like a really nice piece of hardware at this stage of phones. I'm probably more of like I'll look at it next gen kind of guy, see what it does second year. But it seems really interesting to me. I had a broader question though for you about Daydream, the VR thing. By them pulling away from what Samsung's doing with Oculus with their version of VR,
The Gear VR.
Yeah. Does this, I mean, I was already worried that the VR world was going to be really fragmented. Do you think that's, this just makes that harder now? Because now we have mobile fragmentation in the submarket of VR in general.
I think it's too early personally to worry about fragmentation. This is sort of like the early days of the PC when you had a Commodore 64 and a TI-99 and an IBM PC. Everybody's going to try different stuff. And hopefully we'll eventually land on a platform. The nice thing about a lot of these, because they're using the phone, they're going to make apps that will be viewable on multiple types of phones. Now, like I said, Daydream VR only works with the Pixel at launch, but that is something that is kind of just dependent on Google rolling it out to other devices, which they say they will do. They even say they will roll it out to iOS. Cardboard is an open platform that way too. I'm more worried when I see Oculus developing a VR browser, which they announced yesterday that they're going to do that. And it's only going to be useful on an Oculus. I do want the software to be cross-platform, but like I said, I think it's too early to start to worry about that yet.
Brian, are you where are you at with sweet new mesh networks and Google Voice devices that look like air fresheners?
Well, hopefully they work better than my wife's phone upstairs. I can't figure out she's talking to it.
That's that. Which good, huh?
I think it actually happens to be she was talking to her iPad, so it was Siri that wasn't responding.
Oh, well, that's no good for Apple. By the way, speaking of that, I have to make an admission here. I have long felt and held that Siri, as a staying on the sort of technical phone subject here, Siri's been good for things like call this person or take a note for me or set an alarm for 4 o'clock. Those kinds of things, always been great. Recognizes my voice, no issues, never had a problem with that. But when it came to more like data intensive replies, it would usually refer me to some website and say, this is what I found on the web. And it was always a little bit like, it's just not great. And Google Now is always a little stronger in that regard. And certainly Google has the back end for that. So all that being said, I have to admit, as skeptical as I was, iOS 10 Siri, pretty good over iOS not 10 Siri. I don't know what changed or what got tweaked. And I know they're always saying they're improving it, but
Scott,
yeah,
I just want to point out,
go for
because
it.
All the Android fans in the audience are doing it right now. Mm-hmm. You took a Google story and turned it into an Apple story.
Yes, you did. I kind of set him up for that.
You did. I mean, you kind of did, I guess. Yeah, that's fair.
You did.
That
okay.
Wasn't even the one that popped out from that story that I wanted to talk about, but sure.
It's only got the first. It's only because we got new phones this week. All right, forget I said anything, but you're right. And listen, Tom's been in tech reporting long enough to know one of those. He can smell that coming around the corner, and I am just a little newbie to it, so I didn't hear it. All right, so what was the one item in here that you wanted us to hit, Brian? What's the thing that interests you the most?
The Google Mesh, because where I live, they build these houses. Okay, when Germans build things, they build them. And these houses are like bunkers. Nothing gets through them. So I put a Wi-Fi router on one floor, go downstairs, I might as well be on 56K. So I have routers on every floor in my house. Mm. So I'm constantly having to change back and forth, and it doesn't do it very quickly. Mm. So the idea of a smart system that's doing it for me, I'm all in.
Tom, is that still going to work for situations where you've got really thick ceilings, walls, floors?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. I don't know all the ways that Google Wi-Fi is going to work, but it works on the basic principle that Eero does. And I have the Eero mesh Wi-Fi routers. And one of the things they say when you're setting them up is you want to give light of sight from one router to another if you can, because putting walls and things in the way makes it harder for it to be able to communicate with the other routers. Now, so that's the big question, Brian. Will you have any place in your house where you could possibly do that? Because that was impossible for me with two floors.
Yeah, it would be impossible here. We'd have to do what most everybody does and use the power cable. They just plug them straight into those things that turn your power socket into a network thing. Mm-hmm. And that's how most people get their signal to another floor.
Germany, specifically.
I did was I put one downstairs very close to where one was upstairs. Yeah. And so it was going through the floor and it works okay. But
that you might
have thicker,
work.
Yeah, I was going to say you have thicker floors, I'm going to guess, than I do.
The only tip, like this house in particular, the only room that's open is the main floor. Every other floor, all the rooms are closed off. So with the doors closed, it would be it wouldn't make much of a difference.
Well, see, that's it still may be able to punch through, right? That's the key.
Maybe.
And
that's the idea behind this thing. I always feel like, though, when they show these meshable Wi-Fi station things and how you can just keep adding them to get broader and broader coverage, it always feels to me like they're talking about a giant Rambler and not a multi-floor style solution. And again, it depends on, you know, how it's built and what materials are being used.
Like a big old-fashioned Nash Rambler. Mm-hmm. A huge station wagon.
Yeah, Nash Rambler.
That you live in.
When I saw the notes, I thought it was just going to be something we could put on the side of our building and just turn the whole thing into Wi-Fi.
Oh, it's like, man.
Oh, we could use that.
Yeah, I like that a lot. That's a great idea, actually.
Yeah. Well, that's what the former CEO of Aereo, Chuck Kanogia, his new company, is trying to do that. Mm. He's trying to cover the entire country with wireless broadband, and basically that's the idea, is you just get this big touchscreen router that you stick in your house.
I can't believe you took a Google story and turned it into
an Aereo story. Ah, I always do it, Scott. You caught me.
You're the last person that should be saying anything, Scott.
Oh, no. Listen, I know what podcast drift is? I may have defined the word. So I'm there. I'm with you.
Well, at least
you're
not pod fading.
That's right. We're legacies.
Well, we were talking about VR, and of course, I mentioned Oculus. Oculus had a bunch of announcements at Oculus Connect on Thursday. Oculus will sell earphones designed specifically for virtual reality. The Oculus Rift comes with these kind of over-ear headphones, but these earphones are supposed to be better. They'll be less obtrusive, and they're shipping later this year for $49. Oculus Touch controllers were the big thing everybody's been waiting for. Those will be available for pre-order October 10th. You spend $199, you get the two controllers, you get an extra sensor so that the controllers will work better, and you get free games, the VR Sports Challenge and the Unspoken. Those are shipping on December 6th. And since you have a sensor with your Oculus Rift, and if you buy the Oculus Touch, you're going to get a second sensor, Oculus is going to start selling camera sensors on their own for $79, also on December 6th, and support room-scale virtual reality the way HTC Vive does. You just have to have those three cameras. Total, that's going to cost you $880 for a Rift, the controllers, and the three cameras, which is $80 more expensive than the HTC Vive, but you don't have to spend it all at once, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Oculus also lowered the specs required for the Rift. You now can use a new software API called Asynchronous Space Warp, or as I call it, your new API, that lets the Rift run on any machine with an NVIDIA 960 or greater. Before it was a 970, and an Intel i3 6100 or AMD FX 4350. So you can get a little cheaper machine, still use the Rift.
That's not so bad. Don't know about this. I'm still in this position of, if you didn't release your touch controllers with it, which I think are kind of crucial for the future of VR, I think, you know, hand movement and immersion in the world is going to depend a lot on that kind of interface. If you didn't include it as the pack-in, you're going to run into this problem that console manufacturers have dealt with for decades, which is if you're going to release an accessory after the fact, you're going to end up with a way smaller install base. That isn't necessarily a problem. Even if it sells well, it's still okay for Oculus, and it's good for the users who want touch controllers. The problem is you split your developer base in a way that is very unsavory. So you end up having developers who think, well, we really want to make this game for touch, but the install base could be 4060, it could be 2080, we don't know what it is, so let's not put any resources in that. Let's instead have sort of a lesser experience that doesn't involve touch, or just focus on PlayStation VR or Vive development. And I don't know, I just feel like Oculus put themselves in a funky place. The extra $80 is no big deal, I think. If this had been all shipped together, that would have been the key. And if you talk to people who are really heavily involved in VR development right now, like Will Smith over, used to be at Tested, now runs Foo, he said on Twitter yesterday, and it really stuck with me, sorry, Will, that he thinks it's way more important to spend the money on the touch controllers than it is the extra stations or the sensors, because room scale is far less important in his experience using all of these devices for as long as he has been, in creating immersion, touch controllers over room scale. So anyway, it's a complicated thing. I just wish they'd have shipped it with it. And I know there's nothing you can do about it, and they got to do what they got to do. But Brian, are you any closer to thinking the Oculus is for you based on these Kinect announcements?
I'm the kind of guy who buys these things long after there. I didn't even get a GameCube until the PS3 was out.
Oh my.
So yeah, I'm always behind the time. The closest I've come to an Oculus Rift was when the author team I'm part of on Inkshares, Ink Ventures, won the video game contest, mm-hmm. and we got an Oculus for it, and we donated it to the Child's Play auction in December.
Oh, nice. That's a good cause, sure.
I haven't seen them on sale a lot over here in the German stores.
Mm. Well, I like that.
It doesn't mean they're not there.
I like
you must save a lot of money buying things late in the product cycle. Like that's a huge way to get a discount.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, not only
I did pay up front for Civ 6.
Oh, good. All right. You know where your priorities are. But here's the thing. Like you buying a GameCube when the PS3 is already out is almost like you buying it right when it's starting to be cool again to have one. In other words, like there was a period of time there where the GameCube came out. Bunch of hoopla and hype, then it kind of had a decline, and then toward the end people are like, who cares, we're moving on to other stuff. And then now there's a market where people are like, dude, I gotta get some extra GameCube controllers, my old ones are broken and I really want to get that thing running again. And like, you're on the other cycle, so maybe there's something to what you're saying. Wait until they're still cheap enough to be the oldness, but just the right time to grab it, so then in about a year people are going to be coming to you saying, how much for that GameCube you got? I know what you're up to. Nice job.
Plus, I get to watch all of you, you know, early adopters struggle through all of the first editions, yeah. and then the second editions. And by the time it gets to the time I'm buying it, they've got it figured out.
That is a good point.
It's why we do it. Like I'm not even joking when I say that. Like some people make fun of me. Like, why did you buy an Oculus, you idiot? It's first gen. I'm like, yeah, I bought it so I could tell you why you shouldn't buy it because it's first gen.
Yeah, I mean, we're lucky enough to be in a place where sometimes it makes sense for us to have business expenditures yeah, yeah. that are us looking at these things and helping people make decisions. And I really like the Vive, and I was very disappointed with the Rift. But in both cases, I'm still sort of on the fence about whether VR is ready for prime time, the kind of prime time they're hoping for. And early PlayStation VR reviews are good, but a little middling.
One of the things that I didn't mention here is they mentioned a prototype, and all they did was put a picture up, so it's hard to tell what this is actually going to end up being. But Mark Zuckerberg was on stage and he was talking about the prototype of an Oculus that didn't require you to put a phone in it, but didn't require you to be connected to a computer. It was something he said you could just go out into the world with, which I was like, that's probably a bad idea since you can't see. but I know what he meant, which was like, you can be anywhere. You don't have to be tied to a game. You don't have to have cords coming down your back. You also don't have to stick your phone in it. It's, you know, do you think, I sort of think that may be where it needs to get before it starts to catch on mainstream, because the more popular VR seems to be things like the Gear VR, but that's not nearly good enough to really impress people yet.
Completely agree. That is the next step. And when it becomes untethered and the fidelity is better than what you get with your phone, plus you don't have to have your phone in there where you might need it for a call or something, that is absolutely the next step. Now, who does that first and how it looks? Maybe it's Oculus. I don't know. But that's when the mainstream jumps in. I mean, think about it. When you would have a cellular phone in the 1980s and 90s, you had to have some giant brick, or you had to have, if you wanted to have take video or something, you had to go buy a giant over-the-shoulder VCR thing, have really short-lived batteries and a big giant camera on your shoulder with lots of cables. Well, there is a market for that. There are enough people to sort of get in and get going with something like that because it's new and cutting edge. But it's not till like 5-10 years later when cameras the size of our phones can do far better resolution and not have all that junk hanging off of them that they truly become mainstream. So I'm 100% with you that that's when it happens. The question is when, and I don't think it's Gen 2, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're way ahead of that curve already, and this other stuff will seem like a weird afterthought when we get there, but I have to think there's at least another model or two for Oculus, even just them alone, between this and whatever this go out into the world device might be.
This next story is one that sort of trickled out over the week, but I kept seeing more and more outlets picking it up and running with it, even though it broke early in the week. And also folks on Twitter sort of at replying me saying, hey, did you see this? Netflix reached a deal with luxury theater chain iPic to screen 10 of Netflix's movies simultaneously with release. iPic is not a large theater chain. In fact, there's one not too far from my house. I didn't even know it was there until this story came out. They have 15 locations in the United States, mostly in the LA or New York area, although they do have others elsewhere around the US. The next Netflix movie in the IPIC queue will be the war thriller The Siege of Jadotville, starring Jamie Dornan, who also starred in 50 Shades of Grey. That premieres October 7th. That's today. So it is now happening. Netflix movies showing up in theaters day and date across IPIC theaters. This one's going to premiere in Los Angeles. That'll be followed by Christopher Guest's mockumentary Mascots. That's happening October 13th in New York. Netflix has received distribution in small chains and independent theaters before, but it was a struggle to get the minimum number of showings you need to get to qualify for Oscars. It's the only reason they did it. Having this deal with IPIC is two things. One, they're actually getting a chain, even though it's very small, to agree to just show all their Netflix films. So they'll automatically get enough showings. They don't have to make all these deals with independent chains and kind of jimmy things around to get Oscar qualification. But also, it's not just indie movie theaters. It's luxury theaters. So you're going to get a different kind of audience coming to here than you get going to the indies. These are people who are into high-end experiences. And this is the kind of place that, you know, can give you these luxurious seats and bring food to you during the show. And they have a bar and all of that sort of thing. Netflix, of course, banned essentially by AMC and Regal and all the big chains. So they have to make deals like this to be able to get that Oscar consideration.
It's the next step that I always saw coming, which is, you know, eventually, I mean, we've already had examples of movies coming straight home, weekends of release or even days of release, some small examples, but examples nonetheless on iTunes and Amazon Prime and things like that. While I like the idea of, you know, I mean, downloading a movie the same day it comes out is kind of cool. What sounds even better, though, is streaming that movie the day it comes out. And I wonder, Brian, if we ever get to a place, by the way, you're like the 20th Brian, I know. I just want you to know that.
Yeah.
You're like number 20.
Yeah, I noticed.
If we're going to get to a place, do you think, in the future, either here or in Germany, where you don't have to go to the cinema anymore, it literally can come to you. And I know there's all the conversation we could have about these theaters need to stay alive and how, you know, they only make their money because people buy concessions and all this kind of stuff. But do you think we get to a day where it's just straight to you every time, no matter what the movie is, no matter where you're at?
I think before we get there, Netflix needs to figure out the regional, you know, issues with trying to get there, what they're showing their content to different countries. I know Australia, they're like 2 years behind everything. But even over here in Germany, we can't get a lot of the things that are on there while we get access to other things that you guys don't.
Mm. But you're not talking about Netflix originals for the most part. You're talking about
Netflix originals are everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's their aim is to be half Netflix originals within the next 5 years.
Yeah. Which is crazy because they've also said, or maybe it's just been implied that doesn't mean they want to drop the number of third party or studio or TV products. They just want to get their stuff ramped up to be literally 50% of their overall content. If that's true, and it doesn't mean a big drop on the other side to get to the 50, that's an enormous idea. It's a crazy plan. And if the quality's good and the money's being spent on good productions and all that stuff, and so far so good over there at Netflix, that's maybe how this happens. Maybe we just stop caring that a big studio film's coming out in theaters, and we care more that a big studio film that was paid for by Netflix to be produced is coming out on Netflix. Like, maybe that's the workaround.
Are you?
I'm already there. I'm to the point where we only go, I think we went to the theater this year to see Civil War.
Yeah.
That was it. Well, and we'll go to see Rogue One.
See, now there's your thing. That's your, Tom, you've talked about this a bunch on Cord Killers. Isn't this kind of what this is the last bastion is the big studio action crowd pleaser popcorn movies, like what Disney's pumping out with both Marvel and Star Wars movies. But I feel like we're just edging toward a place where that's it. Like, that's the only motivation you have.
Well, Variety pointed out that the other thing going on with Netflix in this deal is getting people exposed to Netflix who may not realize the quality of what they do. Like, there's going to be a Brad Pitt movie coming from Netflix to one of these IPIC theaters. And I think what you're talking about is people who go to the movie theaters and people who just would rather stay at home are becoming two different types of movie consumer. And Netflix wants to be in front of both of them because honestly, their numbers, their subscriber numbers in the US are stagnating, if not falling. So they need a little bit of an extra push. And I think we are seeing, I don't think we're seeing the falling apart of movies. I think we're seeing a very big change in movie going habits. Even Brian, who said, I don't go to the movie theaters, has got two movies. He's like, well, except for those two that I really wanted to see in the theater. Mm-hmm. So what movie theaters are going to have to do is figure out, A, how do we get those people who really love this kind of movie and have to see it in the theater to come to the theater? Because it's those two for Brian, but it's a different two for somebody else and a different two for somebody else. And part of that is being a destination in and of itself. And that's what iPick is doing. iPick is willing to do this because they're like, we don't get people to come to iPick because of the titles. We get to people to come here because they want to sit in our comfy seats and drink a beer and have this luxury experience with a screen and sound system that's way better than they would have at home. So they've actually done, everybody complains like going to the movies is awful. Kids screaming and the food's awful. iPick is like, we're taking care of that. Mm-hmm. We're making it a place that you want to go to. And that's why we don't care if you can stream this at home, because we're competing with your home. We're telling you like, yeah, sure, you can watch it at home and that's fine, but we'll give you a more enjoyable experience.
Yeah, and we're getting the same sort of stuff. Even traditional theaters here are starting to see, you know, luxury seat installations and complete overhauls on some theaters to become luxury seat theaters. So they're kind of taking half steps toward that, and the food's improving, and
you need to come try them in Germany.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what's it? That was actually my next question. What is it like there? I have no idea what a German movie theater's like.
First off, it's all reserved seating, and you can reserve them before they can go buy tickets in advance at the box office. So everybody does it online.
Yeah, no, it's the same in LA. It's the only way to live.
Yeah, it's the only way. I swear we did it first here, but I'm going to give Germany credit here. Go ahead, Germany.
The bigger theaters will have entire, like one, if they have like a 3D special theater, which one, the one in Darmstadt near me does, they have an entire bar at the back of it. And Germans, the way they do movies here, they force a break, which is really odd if you don't know when it's coming. So like in Avengers 2, when Natasha and Bruce Banner were having that really like, intimate conversation, they just cut it. Just stop. The whole movie just paused.
Like, halt!
Oh, that was rough.
Yep, it's just we'll take a break. Yeah, now what? It's just I didn't know that was a thing. So any movie, there needs to be a break. Everyone to the bathrooms. Everyone get a drink. Wow. All right.
Yeah. It's over a certain time, and they want you to go to their bar and get a beverage. So, and by the way, Tom, you know the way to go to the theater and not have the noisy, whiny kids near you, right?
Go to a theater with a bar where they're not allowed in.
That too, but take Brian Ibbett. They'll just be drawn to him like a magnet.
Yeah, he'll soak it up. Brian has some of the worst stories about always being next to the crazy people, the loud kids.
The kid magnet, everything. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's crazy. Yeah, he had to sit next to a really crazy person at Warcraft's premiere.
Oh, I know. I don't know how he stood it. I mean, that guy, what a weirdo. It was
he probably started talking about Apple products during the movie.
Yeah. You've turned a Warcraft movie into a conversation about Apple, bro.
Like I always do.
Ubisoft posted on the Facebook page for Beyond Good and Evil that Michael Ancel is currently working with the Ubisoft Montpellier studio on a new Beyond Good and Evil game.
Finally,
Ubisoft first teased Beyond Good and Evil 2 8 years ago. So it's only yesterday that they told us this was coming. Ancel posted to Instagram earlier this week that the game was in pre-production, but Ubisoft wouldn't confirm it until just today,
so
yesterday.
He is known as the creator of the Rayman series and is thought of very highly in the industry. He is like the, let's call him the French Miyamoto. In a lot of ways, people see him that way. And
so Miyamoto, T-E-A-U-X.
Very well done. So there's a lot of cheese, a lot of smoking, and a little bit of wine. And no one shaves their armpits over at his house. Anyway, the point is, there's all my stereotypes for French people. Patrick, take that. Anyway, the point is this. He is a brilliant dude, great designer. And the fact that he's going to be helming this is really, really good news. The weird bit is, like you said, it was 8 years ago they announced this game or teased it and then shelved it, did whatever. Maybe the time's finally right. But there are legions of fans who love Beyond Good and Evil and cannot wait for the sequel. So this is great news across the board. Now, this is no Civ 6, Brian, but do you find yourself excited anyway?
No, sorry. I missed the first one when it came out. But I'm fascinated by this picture. I want to know more about the pig.
Yeah, the pig's great. I remember so little about this game, but the pig it matters. There's also an older pig that matters. They're bad guys that look like pigs. And more importantly, you have a GameCube now. And the GameCube is where this game debuted, that and PS2. So
I've been moved up to the Wii. So okay. I play it on there.
Well, you're still in luck because you can just plug a controller in there and you're good to go. But this is good news. This is one of the most highly regarded first games. The real trick for me is I think part of it is so much time goes by, kind of like Duke Nukem and a few others where they just go so long with rumors of a sequel. We build up in our heads about how great we thought the original games were, and I'm not sure they really actually match up to reality. So hopefully this isn't one of those, and instead they blow our minds and sells a genius, so maybe he's the guy to do it.
Well, and I called him Michael Ansel. It's Michelle Ansel, yeah. By the way. When I want to correct myself there, but this is the right person, right? Like if nobody else can do it, if he can't do it, nobody else can.
There you go. That's exactly it.
Yeah. Finally, ESA, the European Space Agency's Rosetta spacecraft, crash landed on purpose on Comet 67P Churyumov last week, ending its 12-year-long mission. The crash site was named SICE after the location in Egypt where the Rosetta Stone was found, the actual Rosetta Stone, after which the probe was named. As Rosetta sped towards its doom, it sent back data and images all the way to the last 10 seconds. Last photo was taken 10 seconds before impact, 20 meters from the surface of the comet. A lot of pebbles in that shot, which had people going, huh, now how did those pebbles form? Mm-hmm. Rosetta was the first to orbit a comet and the first to land a probe when the Fila lander was set down last year.
Pour one out for the Rosetta. Now it's covered in...
The ESA is actually very near me.
Oh, yeah?
It's like 25 minutes from my house.
Wow.
My workplace, we've been on tours to it. It's really cool.
Brian, could you say that Rosetta's now covered in stone and you could maybe call it Rosetta Stone?
No. I was wondering if you were going to do that.
Comets are more dusty than stony. It'd be like a Rosetta dust.
It was a rocky transition.
Yeah, it was really pretty bad. It was a rocky transition. Well done.
I feel like our conversation's starting to tail off.
See, you got another one in you. You probably got one more. Give me one more. Come on. Dig
deep. It's going to crash. All probably right. Intentionally.
I don't know. I don't have anything. Get back to me in a period of around 70 years.
All right. Perfect. Nicely done. That's going to do it for our stories. And big thanks to our subredditors who go in there at the subreddit over at currentgeek.reddit.com and submit stories. People like
J.M. Bean and Star Sovereign both submitted stories we used. We really do take it seriously. Go check it out, currentgeek.reddit.com.
Please do. All right. We'd like to take a little time on our shows in the middle and give our guests a chance to talk about what they do. Brian, I have you down as an author, but I know you're more than that. Tell us what's up, man. What are you creating these days? What's your big thing? And tell people where they can find more of it.
Well, the first big thing is the book that came out last month, which, if I remember my conversation with J.M. and C. correctly, will be in your crate this month.
I believe
that's
that is
right.
Correct.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So that just is called Rise. It came out last month. It's sci-fi with some hints of fantasy, but everybody's read it that I know that doesn't like sci-fi and fantasy loved it too. So if you're not a fan of those, you'll still like it.
Yeah, I need to. I've not read it yet, but I want to bad.
Tell us a little more about the story, like just to whet people's appetites.
It's just, well, the themes it deals with are, the big one is living after trauma. Because, you know, when trauma happens, generally, unless you die, you got to live with it for the rest of your life. And the characters in the story, I put them through some really serious trauma. And then we walk through the story with them as they live with it. And in this particular case, the world they live on was nearly destroyed. So their entire world went through trauma, and now thousands of years later, the systems that's been keeping them alive are turning on them, and they're turning on each other, and a war is getting ready to break out unless they figure out what to do.
Oh man, you've got me hooked already. I love that kind of stuff. That sounds awesome. Where can people buy it?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, .com, or at the store. Inkshares, just like Tom Merritt Day. You can go pre-order his book too. A little plug for Tom.
Yeah,
thanks, Brian.
My sequel is also on there too. I've already written it. It's just a matter of getting it through production, through the pre-order phase. And most recently, the big news was got an Audible deal for Rise and a sequel.
Sweet, that is so cool. Well, I'm really excited to read it. It's like absolutely the kind of genre mash that I'm into. And
yeah. you might get feelings of, I don't know, there's a lot of desert and open space. Oh. There's no big trucks driving through it or big explosions. I don't know. That might not, but I think that might be your thing.
You know, whenever we have a guest on, you can always tell whether or not they listen to the morning stream or not. Because
clearly, I've been listening from the beginning.
Clearly, Brian's a fan and has enjoyed my rants, my many rants, here and abroad about Mad Max Fury Road, the best film of the last 10 years.
I think I came through the instance.
Oh, that's cool. That's a gateway drug for a lot of listeners, it turns out. Well, it's good to have all this good information. And if you did get the current Geek Crate Joy this month, you're getting this book. Let me tell you a little bit more about that before we do our pop quiz. It's simple. You go to frogpants.cratejoy.com and you sign up for it. It sometimes includes things like Brian's book, but oftentimes it includes stickers. I have right over here, can't quite reach it, but there is a phone charger that we made that says Current Geek right on it, and that came in a box. There have been shot glasses, there have been stickers, books, prints, calendars, all sorts of stuff. Every month, brand new box. You know how this stuff works. It's the hot new thing, and we're right here for you. Frogpants.cratejoy.com is the place to go. Sign up today. It's how we help pay for the show, and we really appreciate those who have signed up. All right. Look at this.
America scores.
Whoops, that went quiet. I don't know why.
America scores and wins.
I don't know what happened there, but that music can only mean one thing. Time for the pop quiz. Brian, you know how this works, probably. Don't you? You know how this works. All right. Here's how we're going to do it. You're a guest, and you have an area of expertise, apparently. That's what we've been told. Hammond gave us an idea of what your area of expertise should be. And it is World War II trivia. All right? So
great.
So there you go.
I've only lived over here like a good portion of my life because of World War II.
Oh, for real? Is that true?
My dad was in the military. So he was stationed over here, and the whole reason we're still over here is because of that and commitments to our allies. So
that's really cool. So all right. So here's your trivia. The way this works is if you get questions right, you're going to hear this. If you get them wrong, you'll hear this. The entire time, Tom will keep score, and we'll compare you to the averages of those who have come before. Not very scientifically, however. Here we go.
Yeah, because we don't actually know what those averages are.
No one's tracking that, so we have no idea.
No. Tom's tracking it with his wacky scores.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's got a way. Tom does stuff. Who knows?
The scores are relativistic, though, so you can't really compare them from show to show.
You can't. Yeah. It's better not to ask, honestly. That's been my experience.
You can't both know the score and the speed at which someone answered at the same time.
Right.
And it's also always hard to follow along. You're sitting there trying to write with them. Okay, he said, what, 0.1, and then 2/3 of a point, and then 7/4. What? I've lost it.
Yeah. He's got that gavel. Could go down any time. All right. Here is your first question in the area of World War II trivia. How many years did World War II last for?
6 years, almost to the day.
That is correct, and it is almost to the
6 day. 6 points.
So, whoa, geez. All right. Off to a bang start here. All right. Next one. What U.S. battleship got hit 4 times, resulting in 1,177 deaths during the attack on Pearl Harbor?
That would be the USS Arizona.
That is correct.
We're going to give you a point.
It only actually needed one hit, though. The three torpedoes that hit it didn't take it down. It was the one hit in the ammunition thing front half of the ship that took it out.
Was it the first?
All right, you're losing half a point for showing off there.
Wait a minute. I want to know more though. Was it the first hit and then the other two were just kind of superfluous or what?
There were torpedo hits to it, but there was a ship next to it. It was moored on the inside and the ship outside it was too small to block them. So it took a couple torpedo hits, but then a dive bomber, or really a high level bomber, just dropped a bomb straight down. It was a luck shot and it hit the forward ammunition compartment and blew all of that up.
Oh man. All right.
The other thing I was going to say is I'm taking a point away from Iceworm, who writes these quizzes and usually gives very hard questions. Very obviously, like, that was an easy question and way below Brian's hitting level. Like, he knew a lot more about that topic.
I agree. That was super impressive. Here's your next one. Britain and France declared war on Germany after Germany invaded what country? I knew this.
Poland. September 1st, 1939.
You are absolutely correct. Man, we got the difficulty set on intermediate here. We should have cranked it up.
Yeah, what happened? Oh, that's what it was. It's not Iceworm's fault. We just set the difficulty low.
Yeah, we just set it low. All right, next question. What country was the PPSH-41 submachine gun created in?
That's better.
Yeah, there you go. I think that's a Russian gun, but I'm not sure.
Let me check. You are correct. It is Russia / the Soviet Union.
Dean Point.
Yes. It looks like a backwards R with an umlaut on top of it. All right. Final question. Who commanded Operation Overlord during World War II in 1944?
Dwight D. Eisenhower.
He nailed... Tom, when's the last time we had a perfect answer game? It's been a long time.
There is no such thing as a perfect answer game, obviously, Scott, because I had to penalize him for being a show-off on the second
That's a very good point.
It was a very impressive performance, nonetheless. Don't take anything away from that.
Yeah. What's his total score now with your weird math?
Out of a 5 questions, you end up with a 9.5.
Whoa, look at that. That's pretty dang good, dude. I don't think anyone's had that before, so congratulations.
Well, it's all relative, so we don't know.
Yeah, we really don't. Yeah. And no one keeps track.
I mean, it's 9.5 in this space-time continuum.
Oh, I see what you did there. All right, then. Well, there's nothing left to do but this.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Why, looky here. It's time for Forecast. It's where we try to predict the future in pop culture, science, or whatever's on our mind. And I don't know who did this one. Is this you, Brian?
Yeah, it's me.
Oh, cool. All right, so I'm going to read it, and then you get to tell me how you came up with this. We love it when guests have one. So here's Brian's pick. In the near future, don't really know what that means, but we'll say, what's near to you? 10 years, 5 years? What are you talking about?
Sometime before 50 years.
All right, sometime before 50. Is that a standard? I should just know that. I should know that, shouldn't I? Anyway, whatever. In the near future, regional blocks on audiovisual media will be eliminated, and between 50 and 100 years from now, all consumable audiovisual media will be housed in the cloud for global access, presumably by everyone.
Yes, by everyone.
You think it'll? I hope it doesn't take that long. I feel like this should take...
I hope it doesn't either.
Yeah, it feels like it should take less, but what needs to happen for that to take place in your mind?
You'd have to get every country on the planet to buy in. Every country on the planet has different restrictions. Germany is famous for its restrictions on what you can show and can't show. I'm constantly confounded by YouTube videos that are blocked and then not blocked. There's no telling what's going to get blocked. Mm. So you'd first have to get buy-in from all the countries, and then you'd have to figure out how it would be profitable for the people making the media.
So that's the stuff that takes time then, because
yes,
it's not the actual... Certainly it isn't the technology. We're there now. It's the getting the political will together for everybody to be on the same page for how they would do this. Do they still restrict it in Germany if I want to play? Like back in the day, if I wanted to play Unreal Tournament in Germany, I couldn't because it had blood. So the game purposely put in a green blood option that was kind of like made everyone seem like aliens, and then it was okay. Is that still a thing?
No, but... I haven't experienced any limitation like that. Most of the controls that they have are just, they have agreements for how artists' stuff can be played. And if it doesn't fit into the agreement, they just block it. Mm. So it's more like that. It's protecting the artists.
It's almost all rights holders stuff, but it's German copyright laws that allow them to do the blocking.
Yep. Right. So Tom,
it's really frustrating when you're going to watch something on say Netflix or Amazon Prime.
Yeah. No, I'll bet. So what, Tom, let me ask you, how long does it take for that political will to formulate to a place where everybody agrees?
Well, I don't think you need the politics to change. You need the companies to change. I mean, there's no law that says you can't make your stuff available globally. There are a few things that maybe you can't show in Germany that you can show in the United States, but they're very rare. There's more types of things that, you can't show them in Indonesia, maybe, but you can show them. China, I think, has the widest gap of what you can show on the internet versus the rest of the world.
Korea has some really strange ones too.
Korea has some like random ones. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
I like actually watching like movies like Deadpool, the Korean version, because it takes out those things like what your son didn't want to see when you went to see it and asked them about it.
Yeah.
So I think that is part of it, but I think that follows the bigger problem, which is German companies blocking YouTube from showing a video because they don't want anyone to see it unless they're directly monetizing it. In the US, fewer things are blocked because more companies have seen that, hey, it's valuable to let Scott show this on his channel as long as we can monetize it. We're not going to be so controlling over things. So it's more about companies deciding that they want to release things globally. And then I think the political will to harmonize regulations or make it easy for things to fit into the regulations of various regions will follow rather quickly. Netflix is the primary driver in breaking down that wall by saying we are going to make content that we release worldwide at the same time all the time. Mm-hmm. Amazon is doing it too, of course, but Netflix is really the big driver, the big pioneer here. And it will be interesting to see how the other outlets can follow, because you have a incredibly complex system of national television networks, commercial television networks, all broken down by region, not just in Europe, but within Europe and the various countries, who have different rights about what they can show and what they can show online as far as just what series. And that's what Brian was alluding to earlier with, like, even the differences between Netflix. Netflix can show all their stuff universally, but then when they get the rights to Breaking Bad, each country may have a different deal for, like, oh, well, you can have it in Germany, but you can't have it in France because On24 is going to show it there. Oh, and Channel 4 has it in the UK until next year, so you can get Breaking Bad there next year, whatever, right? So those kind of interlocking systems have to fall away. And I think that takes a lot longer because we're still seeing the disruption of that kind of system with cord cutting and Hulu and Netflix becoming an alternative. And that's going to be even harder in places with strong national broadcasters.
Yeah, that's true.
It's really frustrating as an expat or, you know, someone living overseas. I pay for access to Netflix and I have U.S. citizenship, but I can't watch the stuff because I'm physically located here. And our housemate, she's British. It's like a national event for them to watch the Bake Off show, the Great British Bake Off.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
She has to watch it, like, quickly. It's uploaded illegally to YouTube. Everybody sneaks and watches it really fast before it gets taken down. She just did that last night, and all they wanted to do was just watch the show. And yeah. pay to be able to watch the show.
So this is an important, that's the distinction I wanted to get to real quick. You're not saying, hey, one day there'll be this giant cloud pile of content, and everyone can just go in there willy-nilly and get it. Nobody gets paid for anything. In fact, the opposite. We're talking about making it so, whether it's Netflix or some other way, or even multiple myriad of preferred players / providers and distributors. But bottom line is you'll be able to get what you pay for no matter where you live.
Yeah. So the other system you were describing is called Pirate Bay.
That's true. It exists now.
Yeah. But Pirate Bay has horrible quality control. And that's what I've been saying for years is, like, guys, stop trying to run Pirate Bay out of business, compete them out of business. And yes. And Netflix is the beginning of seeing that happen, where it is good enough that a lot of people have stopped using Pirate Bay because they have Netflix. But you can get everyone to stop using things like the Pirate Bay. I'd never say everyone. There's always going to be a small percentage who just want to find something that nobody else is incentivized to put out there. But the majority of people will go for something that is easier to use and well-maintained.
Yeah. Is that a dog?
Well, eventually, hoping we'll also finally be free of all of the bloated websites for the broadcasters.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Those are bad. Those are real bad. That dog I just heard, was that in Germany I was hearing that dog?
No, that's an American cats. Dog.
Dang it. I was hoping it was like a German Shepherd, and I was trying to see if it had an accent.
It was, in fact, a German Shepherd, just not in Germany.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, we have a cat and three rats over here, so.
Hey, I'd raised rats when I was younger. I love rats. They're the best.
Yeah, they're my daughters. She loves them.
They're so cool. Seriously, raising rats, not a bad thing, folks. Tell your kids to raise a rat and they'll really enjoy it. I had one named Shadow. It was a big black rat. Anyway, there's your forecast. We have predicted the future successfully. Watch for it coming to a future near you. Real quick, we got an email from a listener. These come to us at currentgeek@gmail.com. This came to us from Cora. I've heard legends about her. Says this. Hey, geekers. What has been your biggest surprise of 2016 in movies or TV? Would love to know what jumped out at you all. Deadpool for you, eh?
Well, I mean, no one saw that one coming. And who would have predicted at the beginning of the year that Deadpool would outperform Batman versus Superman domestically? It didn't outperform them internationally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm not
single movie Deadpool.
I'm with you there. That one's pretty rad. Tom, do you have a pick?
Yeah, I don't think any TV shows surprised me. Luke Cage is better than I expected, but I also expected it to be good. I have to say that Zootopia took me by surprise, though.
That's great.
Because I knew I would like it, mm-hmm. but I didn't know how wide and deep it would be. And I don't want to make it sound like it's, oh, it's such a deep movie. But there was depth to it that I didn't expect from a cartoon. And I put it right next to Secret Life of Pets. Perfectly enjoyable movie. Had a good time. Not deep at all.
Yeah, I agree. I'm totally with you on both of those. That's a good pick. I'm going to say, so this was no year. This was no Mad Max year, right? I mean, in 2015, it's the only answer I had.
I seem to recall another movie coming out last year that made almost $1 billion domestically that wasn't called Mad Max.
Yeah, the Star Wars, it was all right. It was good. I really liked Episode 7. I shouldn't say it was all right.
Did you say The Star Wars?
The Star Wars. The movie? Yeah, The Star Wars.
Yeah, okay.
Have you all seen The Star Wars?
Have you seen The Star Wars?
For me this year, I think it's TV, and I think it's probably...
Mr. Robot?
Probably Mr. Robot, yeah. Like that thing, I mean... Look, I'm with Justin Robert Young in that it's crawling up its own butt, and I don't know how it's going to get out. But I really, really, really am intrigued by it. And every single episode.
And you're saying that because you started watching season one this year?
Correct. I started watching season one and then went right through two. So, yes, it's all been in 2016 for me because I put off season one. But I am just completely enamored with everything about that show, its tone, its approach, its execution, the fact that it's on USA somehow inexplicably. That's a network I just never expected to do this. I love it. I really love it. And so for me, that's the one that blew my mind. I couldn't really tell you what's going on, though. Like you could ask me, Scott, give me a detailed rundown of what's happening. I really don't know. And I mean, I know some minutia, but I really don't know what the overarching thing is going to be. And maybe I will never know. I don't know what they're going to do, but I'm sure enjoying the ride and loving every second of it. And it kind of is helping redefine what I expect out of some of my TV expectations. If Westworld was...
Like the main audience.
I think I am. I think I'm the guy like they met.
They don't know. They don't know mostly what's going on, but they are thoroughly entertained by it. Mm-hmm. But they couldn't really describe what about it was that they were entertained by.
Yeah. I mean, I love hacker culture. I love the idea of this sort of dystopic view of the world. I mean, everything about it are all bits and pieces of things I like. But usually I like my narrative a little tighter. And I don't know what's happening in these people's lives. So all of that is really cool. But if I had to, if we had more episodes under our belt, and luckily we got an early Westworld episode 2 today, came out late last night, which is totally weird. I don't know why they're doing that, but anyway, Westworld with enough time may have been the one I would have said for this list. I already am in love with it. It's like that was made for me, but it's only one episode in and it doesn't seem fair to count it yet, but I have a feeling that one's going to be my next big addiction. So
Ken from Chicago pointed out Stranger Things. That is a TV show that surprised me.
That's true.
That was very good. The thing that surprised me was my wife was willing to watch it after the sun went down.
Yeah, same here, actually. Yeah.
Same with Kim. She hates that stuff, and she loved this thing.
We kept putting it off because the only time at night we had to watch was at right before bedtime. And then I come home one day, and she and our housemate are watching. I was like, what? I thought we were waiting. He's like, well, you're never here. Yeah. You didn't want to watch it at night.
Yeah. We watched it mostly as a family. It's the kids, the ones we didn't watch it. The kids are mad at us because they wanted to see it. Now they're all catching up. But that's another really good one. And in fact, probably... If I'm really, it's kind of a tie, that and Mr. Robot. It's just Mr. Robot's going. I mean, I kind of know where Stranger Things was going. I have no idea where Mr. Robot's going, and I'm happy to be taken to wherever that is. So anyway,
there's also a lot of nostalgia connected with Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like a walk right through my childhood.
It's like I was 12 watching that thing. It was crazy.
Yeah.
I'm one of
the kids that would never let me play with them because they had all the cool stuff.
Playing D&D by your own self, all by your lonesome there.
Larry Smolinger. Larry Smolinger would always be the DM and he would hog it.
Larry Smolinger.
Yeah.
I love that. You need to make a story about your growing up with Larry Smolinger.
That's why I created Caverns and Creatures, because I was tired of Larry, you know, hogging the DM role.
That's awesome. The things I learned about Tom Merritt at the end of a Current Geek episode, which is where we are, everybody. Thank you guys so much for your emails, Cora, by the way, currentgeek@gmail.com. Big thanks to you. Quick reminder before we go, huge thanks, first of all, Brian. Second of all, where can people once again go find your work?
My author page is guthron.com. That's guthron.com. I try to keep that updated. Otherwise, you can find me on Inkshares, Amazon. And you can follow me at Nidfar.
Give me the name of the book one more time.
Rise.
Rise. R-I-S-E. Rise, everybody.
And the sequel is Fall.
Whoa. What will they
actually, all four of them are that way. It's Rise, Fall, Shatter, Unite.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Nice. I like it. I like the progression.
I was glad you didn't go with Rinse, Repeat, because that would have been weird. Tom Merritt.
It doesn't quite fit the tone.
No, not exactly. Tom Merritt, what's going on with you this week? Anything you'd like to say or mention?
I would just like to remind people that if you want more tech news, like the Google stuff we were talking about earlier, Daily Tech News Show, dailytechnewsshow.com is there for you pretty much each and every day, Monday through Friday, though we'll be taking a day off on Columbus Day on Monday. And you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/dailytechnewsshow. Got a brand new updated page there that gives you all the episodes and comments from listeners and occasional updates from me. So check that out too.
Very nice. Real quick, if you like film, we talk about it a lot on this show. You might want to check out the Film Sack podcast, available at filmsack.com. We have been doing that show since 2009, and it continues to this day. Brand new episode this weekend. I think we're doing something called Pandemic that I have not seen. I have no idea if it's any good or terrible, but that's the whole point of Film Sack. So check it out, filmsack.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. It's award-winning, don't you know? That's going to do it for us. Big thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Currentgeek.com is the website. All our stuff is there. You can even follow Tom and I on Twitter, at Ace Detect and at Scott Johnson. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and for our guest. We'll see you next time. There you go.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we review the lawsuit the TV network AMC is facing from an original showrunner of The Walking Dead. But before we dive into the fate of Negan and Lucille's wrath, I wanted to let this audience know that if you like this segment, I appeared on a recent episode of the Geek All-Stars podcast with Dan the Board Game Man on TMSPM. In the second half of that show, we discuss some interesting cases affecting board game companies and designers in longer form than I can here, so check that out if you're nerds like us. That Geek All-Stars discussion includes the recent Yarrington-Sloshinger dispute over a business deal gone bad in the board game industry, allegedly due to one business partner using his own companies to self-deal with one another and take all the profits to himself. Which is interesting because it's very similar to this case about... Indeed, the former showrunner of The Walking Dead alleges that at least $280 million has been fleeced from him, largely as a result of self-dealing among AMC affiliates. To this end, he argues to a New York court that one affiliate of AMC produces the show, and then licenses it at cut rates to another AMC affiliate, which avoids having the profits from that licensing, which he shares in, go to him, while all the revenue generated from this popular show stays with AMC and its affiliate companies. AMC obviously disagrees with this position. It will be some time before we see this play out in front of a jury, as the New York judge hearing this case apparently does not have any jury trial openings on her docket available until 2018. However, just like the zombie walkers in the show, AMC will have to dodge this threat in order to keep the high amount of profits it has made off this ongoing show and property. The bottom line is, a lesson that is always learned from business deals gone bad is to get the proper protections in writing when making contracts, setting up those companies and business deals. If a minimum license fee or some other oversight or protection were built into the deal for producing and distributing The Walking Dead, then this dispute may never have seen the light of day, let alone waste time and money in court. Great foresight is always key in doing business and making deals.
Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes, get more at frogpants.com.